Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
92.9 FM ESPN presents the area's only national columnist who spends his afternoons bringing unique perspective to Memphis radio. He'll make you think. He'll make you laugh. He'll sometimes make you change the station if children are around. And he apologizes in advance for that. It's 4 o'clock. Let's get into it. This is the Gary Parrish Show.
All right, I'm here. My name is Gary Parrish. I'm talking to you from 54th and Broadway, Midtown Manhattan, New York City. Brad Carson back in Memphis producing the program. Glad he's with me. Glad you're with me. Hope you're getting through the day. No obstacles. No disruptions.
Well, Daddy lost most everything. On horse, whiskey, and wedding rings.
And I hope you weren't hoping somehow, some way, our King and Savior LeBron James would put a banged up and very mediocre Lakers roster on his back and carry him straight into the Western Conference playoffs after he activated playoff mode in recent weeks, because he put together a nice stat line last night, I guess. But it's another Lakers loss. They're now 5.5 games out of the 8th in the Western Conference. They are not going to make the Western Conference playoffs. We are going to experience an NBA playoffs without our King and Savior LeBron James for the first time since 2005. We'll talk about it momentarily. First, though, quickly, let me set this afternoon's schedule for you. 420, Keith Easterwood, my local basketball expert, your local basketball expert, nation's leading authority in Hobo's Heroes Street Corner Clowns. He knows Sam Sausagehead personally. He usually joins me in the first hour of today's Tuesday show, but he's tied up today. So, unfortunately, we're going to miss him. But my former colleague at CBS Sports, Matt Moore, we'll be here right around 420. Matt, of course, is now with the Action Network. He's on Twitter, at HP Basketball. Matt Moore going to join me around 420. We'll talk Grizz, Celtics, LeBron, Trae Young, NBA in general. Matt Moore is going to be here in the next segment. When I finish that, I'll do four notable stories, 444, at which point I'm going to discuss four previously undiscussed stories. Among them, Jim Gatto, Merle Coe, Christian Dawkins were all sentenced today for their roles in the college basketball scandal that was exposed by the FBI. Gatto got 9 months. Code and Dawkins got 6 months each. I'll tell you why the judge was wise to show leniency. Do that around 444. Ole Miss is hosting John Calipari's Kentucky Wildcats tonight down in Oxford inside the pavilion. Jerry Palm has the Rebels as a 9 seed right now in the NCAA tournament, safely in the field. But a win over UK wouldn't hurt anybody. Talk about that a little later on this hour. Mississippi State's at Tennessee tonight. Jerry Palm's got the Bulldogs as a 6 seed in the NCAA tournament right now. Got UT as a 1 seed. So this is a matchup between two schools that will be expected to advance in the NCAA tournament. We'll get into that just before 5 o'clock. And Kansas' streak of 14 straight Big 12 titles could be snapped tonight officially. It's in real jeopardy. In fact, it'll take something close to a miracle for them to extend it to 15 years. I'll tell you why in a bit. We'll talk nothing but college basketball during four notable stories at 444. 5 o'clock, Jeff Calkins, just like always. Then I'll eventually do dinner to go and get out of here. So that's the rundown. Got a lot to get to, but I wanted to start with LeBron James, another rough night for our King and Savior. So I was delayed last night getting out of Memphis, right? Didn't get to my hotel in New York City till after midnight Eastern, but I did get here in time to turn on Lakers Clippers while I was unwinding and trying to get some work done. And it was a nightmare if you're a Lakers fan or a LeBron fan. LeBron got 27 points, 8 rebounds, and 6 assists. And so he should pass Michael Jordan on the all-time scoring list next time out. He wasn't bad, but the Lakers still lost 113-105. So they're now 30-34. They're 5.5 games out of 8 in the West. Just 18 games left, which is obviously less than ideal. The 538 blog now projects the Lakers to finish 39-43. And it now only gives the Lakers a 2% chance to make the Western Conference playoffs. So this is over, and LeBron seems to know it. I thought our friend Matt Moore, who, again, going to join me in the next segment, had an interesting tweet last night. He tweeted the following. He said, quote, LeBron played almost 43 minutes and lost to the little brother team that traded their best player at the deadline to clear cap room to sign players LeBron may miss out on this summer. Yeesh. And that's rough stuff. I mean, it's true. Think about this. The Clippers are supposed to be the Clippers and the Lakers are the Lakers. They're supposed to understand their roles. And I know it hasn't quite been the Lakers on top of the Clippers in recent years, but like the Lakers are still the Lakers and the Clippers are still the Clippers. The Lakers are trying to win. The Clippers traded Tobias Harris, their best player, at the trade deadline because winning isn't even the main priority with the Clippers franchise right now. It's the main priority with Patrick Beverley and the guys on that roster right now, the guys you saw last night. They're trying to win, but as a franchise, the Clippers made a decision at the All-Star break. Winning is not the priority. The priority is clearing cap space so that we can make a run at some of these big free agents, whether it's Kawhi Leonard, Jimmy Butler, whomever. And so that's who the Lakers were supposed to have to beat last night, a team that didn't prioritize winning. The desperate Lakers.
Yeah.
And they still lose it. And so now, and meantime, the Clippers are seventh in the West right now. Like, the Clippers made a decision at the trade deadline that winning this season, going to the playoffs, is not our main priority. And they're actually going to go to the playoffs, probably. And the Lakers aren't, almost certainly. And the point Matt makes about free agents is on point. Like, what stars are going to want to join this mess in L.A.? Because here's the truth. Like, LeBron has alienated himself from his teammates and maybe killed another coach in Luke Walton. Or maybe Luke Walton's killed himself. You know, but either way, they're about to go through a coaching change. And LeBron's 34 years old. He's going to be 35 next season, 36 the season after that. He's still an unbelievable player. But we talked about this last week. I saw an NBA analyst / columnist tweet something to the effect of, we need to stop just out of habit calling LeBron James the best player on the planet because he's not the best player on the planet anymore. He's still maybe one of the 10 best, maybe one of the 5 best, but he's not one of the best players on the planet. He's starting to look a little less than he looked as recently as last season. And I'll be honest, I don't watch enough possessions of Laker games for a variety of reasons to know whether that's true or not. But when that is starting to be something people are noticing, like, he's still great, and he is an all-time great, maybe even the GOAT, but he ain't that anymore. He's not the best player on the planet right now. So if you're one of these big free agents, like, don't trick yourself into thinking you're going to play with LeBron James from last year or 3 years ago. You're going to play with 35-year-old LeBron James. Does Kevin Durant want to do that?
No.
Nobody I know thinks so.
No.
Does Kawhi Leonard want to do that?
I wouldn't
Nobody
think so.
Nobody I know thinks so. Kyrie Irving seems more interested in either staying in Boston or maybe going to New York to play with Kevin Durant. And who knows, maybe Zion Williamson. Klay Thompson didn't appear to be leaving Golden State. You know, I happen to work every week with two guys who played with LeBron James, Brendan Haywood and Richard Jefferson. I think I'll work with Richard tonight. We spent a lot of time last week talking about LeBron. And one of the things they said, and you know, I want to not violate their confidence, so I'll just keep it in general terms, but like, Jimmy Butler and LeBron James as teammates would be a disaster.
Yeah.
Because most people will, you know, sort of cater to LeBron, and you understand, like, yeah, well, this is the way LeBron is. But Jimmy Butler's not that type of personality. Jimmy Butler will tell anybody to go F themselves. So, like, Jimmy Butler and LeBron would be bad, and the rest of these guys probably don't want to go play with LeBron in L.A. for different reasons. So maybe, I mean, what, you want to go get Kimball Walker? Mm. Is that the difference maker? And either way, if you really are getting Anthony Davis in the summer of 2020, then you got to keep that cap space open. So you might just have to do another big deal on a big number 1 year contract for somebody so that money comes off the books summer 2020 so you can go get Anthony Davis then. Like, so this is, and by the way, LeBron, by the time let's assume that they miss on the big free agents this summer, which is very possible for reasons that I just pointed out. If they miss on the big free agents this summer, yeah, they might add Anthony Davis in 2020, but LeBron James will be 36 years old. Kobe Bryant made his last All-Star game when he was 34. LeBron James still going to be a difference maker 2 years after that? I mean, maybe. But it's starting to look like this thing, like, just maybe not be anything close to what some of us, and yeah, I'll include myself in this because I was wrong. I thought the Lakers would be a top four seed in the West this season. And LeBron would have a chance to maybe win championships in L.A. It doesn't look likely now. I mean, the top four seed in the West, that's over. They ain't going to make the playoffs. But, like, okay, let's take this season and just trash it. What's next year going to look like? If they can't really add a superstar, how's it get much better? I mean, they can get better, you know, stay healthy enough to make the playoffs maybe. But does anybody think this team is close to doing something to put it up there with Golden State and Denver and Oklahoma City and Portland? It doesn't look like it. And again, if you can't add a superstar until the summer of 2020, well, then that's LeBron James' age 36 season. You know, the idea that you could, you know, in a time where the Golden State Warriors are operating at the level they're operating, and maybe they're building a monster in New York, you know, maybe they're building a monster in Boston, like who knows? But the idea that you're going to be able to build something with an age 36 LeBron James that's going to challenge that, I don't know. Just seems unlikely at this point. Anyway, back to last night's game. It was interesting. Former Cavs GM David Griffin was in studio, NBA TV. He's really good, by the way. And he said he was talking to somebody from the Clippers yesterday. And they said the following, quote, the Lakers' best, because he was asking about the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
And David Griffin said, the person with the Clippers said this. He said, you know, the Lakers' best will beat our best, but we play our best every night, and they don't. And they kept referring to him. I don't know if you watched this game or if you did, if you even noticed, but like during the broadcast and even in the post game, they kept talking about the grit and the grind of the Clippers. It was like the grit grind Clippers. And I was just wondering, like, if Grizzlies fans were watching this last night, like, are you just, like, wanting to throw up?
Right.
Because the Clippers are supposed to be the opposite of grit grind. It was the flopping Clippers.
Right.
But now you've got this sort of ragtag bunch of guys playing hard, you know, every night, scrapping and clawing and overachieving. Patrick Beverly serving the role as Tony Allen. And, like, these were actual NBA people, both in studio and on the game broadcast, talking about the grit and the grind of the Clippers. And so I want to talk to Matt more about that in the next segment. Like, is that a thing now? Did the Clippers just take grit grind? Is it now the grit grind Clippers?
They took it.
And Staples Center is the grindhouse now? Like, is that something that's really happening in the NBA? And so I just found that interesting. I'll ask Matt more about it in the next segment. But, like, the game got bad. And there were a couple moments that went viral. One, everybody was mocking it. I saw the Barstool Twitter feed, the Bleacher Report Twitter feed. It was like crying, laughing emoji. And the moment is, and perhaps you saw this, if you were watching the game, you did, and maybe even if you weren't watching the game because it was all over Twitter. There's this moment where the Lakers inbound the ball, like 31 seconds left in a quarter, and LeBron lets it roll all the way down.
Oh, yeah, and then he takes the three, right.
And then he takes the three, right? I mean, the ball literally rolls all the way down the court.
Yeah.
And then he picks it up near the three-point line and just launches it, right?
Yeah.
And everybody was laughing about that.
Yes.
Like, Barstool was like, man, LeBron just does not give an F anymore. Like, he just let a ball roll down the court and then just picked it up and launched it.
So weird.
Except, you know what it was?
What?
Smart. Here's why. And I don't know why most people didn't pick up on this. He was just getting a 2-for-1. What was dumb about it was the Clippers allowed him to do it. Like, by a 2-for-1, for people who don't follow basketball in that way,
sure,
it's when there's enough time on the clock for you to get a shot, but keep the shot clock on so that then you can get another shot after your opponent comes down and takes its shot whenever it does. In other words, so if there's and this happens in the NBA all the time. In college, they'd almost never do it. Duke does it because Mike Krzyzewski subscribes to it, but too many college coaches don't. It's one of my biggest complaints about college basketball coaches. Like, they do not take advantage of 2-for-1 opportunities. That's all LeBron was doing last night. Think about this. So there's 31 seconds left on the clock. You, as long as you can get a shot off in the next 2 or 3 seconds, let's say you get a shot off with 28 seconds, right?
Yep.
You've got the ball. There's 31 seconds left. You get a shot off at 28 seconds. You make it, you miss it, doesn't matter. the opponent rebounds the ball, and their shot clock starts. So now there's 24 seconds on the shot clock, 28 seconds on the game clock. That means you're going to get the ball back as long as you don't give up an offensive rebound. And then you're going to have an opportunity to get another shot. In other words, at the 31-second mark, you can get two shots while they only get one.
Sure.
That's what LeBron was doing. He wasn't letting it roll down because he doesn't give an F anymore. It was as soon as you touch the ball, the clock starts. And if he touches the ball in the backcourt, there's almost no way to get a shot off in time to execute a two-for-one opportunity. So the reason he let the ball roll all the way down the court is and then just pick it up and shoot it is because it was a reasonable shot for him. It was an open three-pointer. He missed it, but like it's not an unreasonable shot. But he needed to get the shot off at like 30 seconds, 29 seconds, to be able to have an opportunity at a two-for-one. It was actually a very smart basketball play, but like Twitter just flamed it because they interpreted it as, well, there's LeBron James not caring anymore. He just let a ball roll, picked it up, threw it at the basket.
The visual of him clanking the three after it, though, I think is why people are rolling their eyes, because it's like,
Yeah, except, again, the dumber thing would have been to pick up the ball in the backcourt like you normally would,
sure,
and then dribble it up, and then because now you're in a one-for-one. You're going to get one shot, they're going to get one shot. But if you let it roll, pick it up, immediately shoot it, now you've got a two-for-one opportunity.
Sure, I get
it. So if you saw that on Twitter and everybody was laughing about it, just understand that that was not – there are plenty of things that happened in last night's game that were maybe evidence that LeBron James doesn't care, like on the defensive end of the court. But that wasn't one of them. That was actually a very smart basketball play. Either way, it got ugly inside Staples Center. Fans were booing LeBron.
Yeah.
Telling him to guard somebody.
Yeah.
And chanting at one point.
Yeah.
When he was at the free throw line, I think, we want Kobe. And like LeBron's been having to deal with this ghost of Kobe thing since he got
there.
That's
awesome.
But it was right in his face last night. I mean, the fans are actually chanting. Think about that. I mean, this is LeBron James, who has been worshipped by his own fans since he was literally in high school. And probably for the first time ever, he has his own fans. I know he's been a villain elsewhere, even in Cleveland when he went back with the Miami Heat. But his own fans, whether it was St. Vincent, St. Mary, Cleveland the first time, Heat, then Cleveland the second time, he has always been adored by his own fans. Now, maybe for the first time in his life, I'm assuming it is, he's being booed by his own fans, and they're chanting, we want Kobe, which is fine. But I will say this. The idea that Kobe Bryant was immune to what LeBron James is going through right now is just revisionist history. I mean, here's the truth. Kobe Bryant never won anything without – never won a championship, I should say, without a future Hall of Famer in his prime right beside him. Kobe got five titles, three with Shaq, two with Powell. When Shaq left after the 2003-2004 season, in 2004-2005, when Kobe was 26 years old, healthy, and already a seven-time All-Star, so right in his prime, not 34 years old like LeBron is right now, but 26 years old in his prime, finished 11th in the West, missed the playoffs. Next year, 7th in the West, lost in the first round. That was at age 27. Next year, 7th in the West, lost in the first round. That was at age 28. Then 2007-2008, Powell shows up. Lakers get good again, win a title 2009, win a title 2010. And then Kobe missed the playoffs in each of his final three seasons of his career, finished 14th in the West, 14th in the West, and 15th in the West at age 35, 36, 37. So the Kobe stands are kind of silly. Like Kobe actually missed the playoffs in his prime. That never happened to LeBron James. But all that said, this much is undeniable. Year one of LeBron in L.A. has been a disaster. And now he really might become the first MVP-level Laker to not win an NBA title with the Lakers in more than 45 years. If things don't get better, and I mean way better, that will probably be part of LeBron's Laker legacy. What does the Action Network's Matt Moore think about all this? Can he find even one reason to be optimistic about the Grizzlies' immediate future? I'll talk to Matt Moore. I'll ask him those things next.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show, live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN. This ain't a
wave or a phase, cause all that fade. Kentucky is at Ole Miss tonight. Mississippi State is at Tennessee. Zion Williamson is not playing against Wake Forest for Duke. We're going to get into college basketball in the next segment. Jeff Calkins will join me a little after 5 o'clock, but right now, Matt Moore works for the Action Network. You can enjoy his work at actionnetwork.com. He's on Twitter, at HP Basketball, and he's here right now making the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parrish Show Big Interview. Presented by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse in Memphis. Now on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Matt Moore, it's Gary Parrish. How you doing, man?
Good, man. How you been?
Everything's been all right. I mean, busy, but, you know, I've got my head above water, and I know you're busy, and so you're never going to be the person I would complain to about working too much, because I've seen your work habits, and you work a lot.
Hey, man, got to keep the checks rolling in.
There's no question.
Got to keep the wife happy.
noted, for sure. Let's start with last night and what appears to be the biggest story in the NBA, and that's that the Lakers lost again, and now, you know, 5.5 games out of 8th place in the West, only 18 games left. Like, they're not going to get there. Are you surprised by what's happened in L.A. in year one of the LeBron James era?
I am, just because I thought that LeBron James making the playoffs was an immutable law of the universe. You know, there's just certain things you come to expect in the NBA, and him making the playoffs is one of them. This is going to be the first time. He's only failed to win 50 games once in the last, like, 12 years. It's incredible, the streak that he was on. And, it does cause some questions about, man, has the East really been that weak? Like, you can't get around that. The fact that the Lakers, he did miss time with an injury. They were fourth before he got hurt. But the fact that they fell apart so badly versus what was, you know, not an incredibly tough schedule, I think shows you how much tougher the West is. It's shocking the way it fell apart. It's shocking the way that their chemistry really eroded. It was dramatic. It really seems like there's just a lot of discord between everybody in LA, and there's a lot of blame to be passed around. This is a pretty bad situation. Everyone thought that, you know, okay, it's year one. Let's settle in. We'll have a good year, and then we'll go forward and try and be a championship caliber team. And instead, they're nowhere close. And it's going to cause, I think, a lot of reexamination of where the franchise is headed in the offseason.
Well, that's a point I made in the opening segment. Like, it's not just that year one is year one. It's that it's hard to now imagine a realistic scenario that gets them where at least I thought they could maybe get, which is, you know, to a place where they're competing with the Warriors and anybody else for world championships. Because you start looking at the free agents who could theoretically join LeBron, you know, this summer, Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, Kyrie Irving, Jimmy Butler, Klay Thompson. Most people think those are just not going to do it. And if you wait till 2020 to get Anthony Davis, that's LeBron's age 36 year. I mean, it really does start to look like this thing might not work.
Yeah, and I did a lot of blame to be passed around between the Lakers and LeBron himself for choosing the Lakers, because honestly, it's, you know, he now, with where they're at, he's wasted a full year of his late prime. Like, this year was a waste. It was an absolute waste. That team should have been able to keep them at least above water until he got back. They could have surged at the end, gotten into like a seventh spot, and then you're facing Denver with very little playoff experience. It could have been drastically different. And the fact that they didn't is that, once, a failure of the Lakers to put the adequate talent around him, and be on LeBron for choosing not to go to a better team. He's still regarded as, if not the best, then one of the, like, top two best players in the world. And you've wasted a year because you chose to go to this franchise when you clearly had eyes on entertainment ventures instead of going somewhere where you could compete. For him to have come out a couple weeks ago and said, is basketball the most important thing, when asking about his teammates, that to me was like, that was the bridge too far. That was one too far for me to be able to swallow. I've listened to a lot of questionable LeBron quotes through the years doing this for 10 years. That one may have taken the cake.
Because it's quite clear, if basketball was the most important thing to him, he wouldn't be living in Los Angeles right now.
Correct. If basketball was the most important thing, go join Philly with Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons and J.J. Redick, a shooter around you, a playmaker, and a dominant inside big man. Go to Houston. Houston was ready to make the move to add him. You could have had Chris Paul, your buddy, next to you. You could have had James Harden, an MVP candidate. You could have had spacing and shooting and a chance to really go after the Warriors to add another title. But I really think that the Warriors broke him the last 2 years with how dominant they were, and J.R. Smith's mental flub at the end of game one last year was like, that was the straw that broke the camel's back, because it's just very apparent that his priorities shifted after those finals.
I'm talking to Matt Moore from the Action Network. You can read his work at actionnetwork.com. He's on Twitter at HP Basketball. How much did the trade deadline contribute to what happened with the Lakers from a chemistry perspective?
I think a lot. I think it definitely changed the tone of the team in terms of, why am I going to go out there and give 100% and go full bore if you're just planning on replacing us? And the fact that it wasn't, LeBron's tried so long to be like, I'm not the GM, I'm just a player, I leave those decisions elsewhere. The fact that Rich Paul, his agent, put this so publicly out there, the fact that Rich Paul did not have another client before LeBron James, that LeBron James is his major client that's opened the door for all the rest of them, like, it clearly put LeBron's fingerprints all over it. And so when you're the leader of the team, how are those guys going to play all that hard for you? Now, at the same time, part of what happened was, in the early part of the season when they were winning, the veterans were playing great. Rajon Rondo, JaVale McGee. But those were guys you didn't expect to have great seasons throughout. And later on, when the kids started picking up, when Brandon Ingram started shooting well from the field, they weren't able to win games with that formula. And that shows you the tension between veterans and young guys, and why this whole experiment was always going to be rough before you got into the dynamics of not enough shooting and not enough playmaker, or not enough, defensive playmakers and not enough versatility. There was a lot of roster issues in there that contributed, along with the drama that happened around the Anthony Davis debacle.
A last thing on the Lakers. Now the conversation is whether they should shut him down. LeBron has said if he's healthy, he's playing, but would it be wise to shut him down?
I honestly think the optics are really bad on that. For him to not even compete out the rest of the season, I think you have to manage his minutes. But I think you go ahead and you let him finish the year. He's been durable outside of this one injury. If he has any sort of flare-up with anything, if he feels anything less than 100%, you sit him, or at least 80%, you sit him. But I do think you keep, put him on minutes restriction. You say, all right, we're going to try and get him down to 20, 25 minutes a game, less than 30, and take it that way. There's not a whole lot of incentive to tank. They're not going to catch really any sort of momentum to move up in the lottery spot. So I think they go ahead and try and build some momentum, because part of it is, with his injury, he and Ingram started to develop chemistry late. You want to build on that. You want to try and build more chemistry with Ingram and Kuzma, if you don't trade them for Anthony Davis this summer. So at least you have some building blocks you can take forward going into next season.
Last night, and I'm talking to Matt Moore from the Action Network, he's on Twitter at HP Basketball. As I'm watching Clippers-Lakers, both the in-game analyst and studio people kept talking about the grit of the Clippers and the grind of the Clippers. It was like they were doing grit-grind Clippers. Is that a thing now? Because I didn't realize that was a thing now.
I think that's mostly become a term used whenever you don't have star players and most of the national audience doesn't know the guys on your team. Like, the best player on the Los Angeles Clippers, in my opinion, is Montrezl Harrell. The second best is Danilo Gallinari. The third best is Lou Williams. And none of these are household names. Pat Beverly, obviously putting on a show defensively, I think adds to kind of that, but they've been consistently good defensively. I think that's probably been part of the contributing factor there. I wouldn't put them in the grit grind territory. I just think that they're a bunch of guys that most people don't know.
That makes sense. I'm talking to Matt Moore here from the Action Network. Switching gears, what do you make so far of Marc Gasol with the Toronto Raptors?
Some interesting returns. The passing has been better than I anticipated. They weren't a great cutting team when he got there. And I kind of thought that might be a jam for them, that he needs to be a high-volume passer and playmaker, and they weren't really running that kind of offense. But they've managed to integrate it. They've done some interesting things this year where there's been, like, their offense is very partitioned in that Lowry kind of runs one offense with Siakam, and Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard run another. And now with Marc Gasol, he's kind of the nexus between the two, and he's fit in nicely in that. They're starting to have the same kind of frustrations I think the Memphis fans had, where they asked, why isn't Gasol being more aggressive offensively, and why is he taking mid-range jumpers, and how come there aren't more post attempts and things like that? That's going to be a continuing issue. The question is going to be, I think, is Mark still able to win his matchups in the playoffs? And that's a question I still have a lot of doubts about at this point in his career.
Is there a simple answer to the question, what is wrong with the Boston Celtics?
Yeah. I don't mean to be reductive. You asked for a simple one. If I had to give a simple one, it's Kyrie Irving. That's the simple answer. He's a difficult personality, having a difficult year, who's being extra difficult and making it hard on, I think, everybody. I think that his free agency is a question. I think that his approach to the young guys and his leadership has caused issues. There's no real sense of togetherness. They're not connected. That's what I'm riding on right now for today, is that team's just not connected. And that goes to leadership. And you compare that with a team like Portland that doesn't have better talent than Boston, but they're all on the same page and they're connected. They're playing together. And a lot of that goes to Damian Lillard and the way that he approaches the game. So if you ask me for the full answer, is it all on Kyrie? No, not at all. But I think that if you're looking at symptoms and you want to trace it back to the root problem, Kyrie is at the source, I think, of a lot of the issues.
A couple more things. Trae Young has been on a tear until he got ejected, probably unfairly, the other day. Are we seeing superstar qualities in him? I mean, is it looking like he, you know, some people, the folks who were really in on Trae Young were like, could be the next Steph Curry. Well, the Steph Curry's got two MVPs and, you know, three championships. Yeah. That's a big, big bar to set. But he's making shots from all over the court and putting up big numbers. So where are we at with him?
Yeah, I think the thing with Young is going to be, can he survive in a playoff matchup? That's the problem with superstars, right? Is like, you can put up big numbers in the regular season, but the scouting report's going to get in on Young, and that's going to make things a little bit harder. And teams are going to start to target him more on defense, and that's going to be very difficult for him. You know, Steph plays on a team with such great defensive talent, especially with Draymond Green next to him for the majority of his contending career, that enables him to be a fine defender. Steph gives great effort on ball, and so he's fine. He's big enough. Young is in a different camp. He's smaller. He's a lot more prone to issues, I think, on that end. So these are all things that are going to be down the line. But the reality is, I was always marveled at how good of a passer he was coming out of college. And with his shot coming around, and his feel for the game combined with that passing ability, they're going to be really good. And the thing that one GM did ask me the other day is, can you imagine if Atlanta wound up with Zion and you put Zion in pick and roll with Trae Young's passing ability? That team looks scary.
Wow. Wrapping up here with Matt Moore from the Action Network. He is on Twitter at HP Basketball. Last thing before I let you go, how bad are things going to get with the Grizzlies, and how long will it stay bad?
A while. Yeah. I can't. I there's no way for me to really be able to project good things. If they convey the pick this year and the draft class looks better next year than it does right now, then, yeah, I can kind of say, like, well, maybe down the road. You know, I think Jaren Jackson is going to be phenomenal for them, and that's the upside. But they needed to really nail a Mike Conley trade probably at the draft to get some younger guys in and start fresh. There's just a lot of roster issues. There's just a lot of contract issues. I'm not sure what the future in the coaching staff is going to be. I just think that everything that could have gone wrong did. That Celtics pick protection is problematic. It's very hard for teams in Memphis's market kind of situation to dig out quickly. And it's hard to see a way for them to easily transition. It could be a while in Memphis.
That is Matt Moore from the Action Network. You can read him at actionnetwork.com. He's on Twitter. You're probably already following him, but if you're not, it's at HP Basketball, at HP Basketball. You're the best, buddy. I appreciate you being here. It was good to talk to you.
Anytime, my man. Take care.
All right, I'll see you. That's Matt Moore from the Action Network. When we come back, turn our attention to college basketball. Big game down in Oxford at the Pavilion. John Calipari's Kentucky Wildcats are on campus at Ole Miss. We'll get into that, plus Tennessee, Mississippi State, plus... three men were sentenced today for their role in the college basketball scandal that was exposed by the FBI. I'll tell you how much time they got next.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show, live from the Bluff Restaurant and Sports Bar Studios on 92.9 FM ESPN.
It feels so good, it should cost. Brought an alligator, I ain't talking Lacoste. Made me say, like a mix of Master P and Rick.
So I was on with Jeff Calkins earlier today, like I am on every Tuesday morning, and just because sometimes we get off on these conversations we didn't plan on having, we ended up talking about Pete Davidson and Kate Beckinsale and what men look for in a woman and what we think women look for in men. And so we were just sort of talking off the top of our heads, and I think I had some good answers, but I was just, I don't know, I was thinking about it after I got off the air. So I spent part of this afternoon like Googling, what do men want from a woman? What do women want from men? And I got some answers. I'm going to go through some of them with Jeff Calkins in the next segment. He's going to be with me a little after 5 o'clock. But right now, let's focus on college basketball. I got four stories I'd like to discuss.
Four stories presented by the Bluff Restaurant and Bar. Four notable stories at 4:44. Gary tends to lose focus, start telling stories, and forget what he wanted to talk about at certain points every afternoon. So we've developed a device that ensures he'll touch on important things you need to know each day at this time. This is GP's Four Notable Stories at 4:44. Story number one.
Adidas executive Jim Gatto, former Adidas consultant Merle Code, and would-be agent Christian Dawkins received their sentences in the college basketball corruption scandal at a New York City courthouse on Tuesday after being found guilty on several charges last fall. Gatto received a 9-month prison sentence, Merle Code and Christian Dawkins 6 months each. U.S. District Judge Lewis Kaplan delivered a relatively lenient sentence and explained afterward that he believes the defendants, the convicted felons, have, quote, learned their lessons. And I think he's right. Listen, I've met these people before, Jim Gatto, Merle Code, Christian Dawkins. I don't know them. I don't have a relationship with them. So when I say I'm glad the judge showed some leniency, it's not because one of my buddies is avoiding serious jail time, although, you know, these men are going to do at least 6 months, and in one case, 9 months in a federal prison. The reason I'm glad the judge showed leniency is because I've thought from the beginning this whole thing is bananas, that these men would be facing federal crimes and facing federal prison time for basically breaking NCAA rules. And I know, listen, the courts have ruled, and I'm not a lawyer or a judge, so it is what it is. But the way the federal court looked at this and the way anybody who understands basketball would look at this are completely different ways. My point being this, is all rooted in the way they got the convictions, is that it was argued that Christian Dawkins, Jim Gatto, Merle Code, by conspiring to get a deal done to send McDonald's All-American Brian Bowen to Louisville, and the deal was get Brian Bowen's father, more than $100,000, or maybe it was exactly $100,000. The way they got the convictions is that the U.S. Attorney's Office argued that they defrauded the University of Louisville because they sent Louisville a prospect who was ineligible because they had violated NCAA rules to get him there. Therefore, Louisville then placed on scholarship and gave federal money to an ineligible player and was risking all of the things that it was risking, possible vacated games if he ever played, bans, probation, all sorts of stuff, that Louisville was the victim in this crime. Same thing they argued about Kansas as well, that Kansas didn't benefit from Silvio D'Souza being bought and paid for, that they were a victim in a crime. And anybody who knows anything about basketball knows that that's just bananas. It's crazy. Christian Dawkins, Jim Gatto, Moral Code were working in Louisville's interest. The reason they did what they did to get Brian Bowen at Louisville was to help Louisville, to help Rick Pitino. So I've always thought that it's just crazy that you could actually, with a straight face, try to pretend like Louisville was the victim or Kansas was the victim. And therefore, by extension, crazy that these men are going to go to jail for this. But they are going to go to jail for this. But I thought the judge did the right thing by showing leniency, because what is the point in sending these people to jail for 3 years? These are not hardened criminals. You know, two of the guys are, you know, college educated, you know, men with families. You know, and like, they're not out there, to their knowledge, breaking any laws. That's the other thing here. And I've talked about this before, but when you run a stop sign, you know exactly what you're doing, and you know what happens if you get caught. If I get caught running the stop sign, a police officer might pull me over, and then I might get a ticket for running the stop sign, and then I'll either have to pay it or go to court. But you know exactly what you're doing. This is what I'm about to do, and if I get caught, this is the punishment for it, right? And you can take it up to the extreme. Murder. You're going to murder somebody. You know the stakes involved. I'm going to kill this other human. If I get caught and convicted of it, I will spend the rest of my life in prison, or maybe even get the death penalty. Like, usually when you break a law, the way these men broke this law, these laws, you know exactly what you're doing and the punishment for it if you get caught. They had no idea this would be the punishment for it. Jim Gatto, Merle Code, Christian Dawkins, when they were doing what they were doing, which is orchestrating a deal outside of NCAA rules to send a prospect to the University of Louisville, what they thought, all they could reasonably think, is that if we get caught, oh boy, we might lose our jobs. We might get Louisville in NCAA trouble. We might get Brian Bowen in NCAA trouble. But at no point was it reasonable to think, and we also might be charged with federal crimes and convicted of federal crimes and have to do years of prison time. Like, that's not even in, it's just like not even in the realistic realm of possibilities. And I've always been, I don't know, less enthusiastic about sending bad guys to jail when the bad guys didn't even know what they were really doing could possibly land them in jail. And so I think Judge Kaplan was doing two things here. Showing leniency on people who, yes, broke NCAA rules, but probably don't belong in a federal prison. And then B, by saying they learned their lesson, they've admitted their mistakes, because all three men spoke today and acknowledged their mistakes, their bad decisions, that could be a message to anybody else who has a trial scheduled under the umbrella of the college basketball scandal. These men admitted their mistakes. I showed them leniency. They've learned their lesson. Admit your mistake. Don't take this to trial. Because you take this to trial and you get convicted, and you will get convicted, I'm not going to show leniency on you, because it will be evidence that you haven't learned your lesson from them. Learn your lesson. Cut a deal. I'll show leniency. But you try to take me to trial again, you're going to get convicted, and I won't be quite as lenient, because it'll be evidence you're not paying attention to anything that's been happening in this courtroom. So I think it's the reasonable thing to do, but also sends a message to anybody else who's got a trial on the books.
Story number two.
Kansas's string of 14 straight Big 12 titles might actually technically officially come to an end tonight, and that's because Texas Tech won last night. Kansas State won last night. Both improved to 13-4 in the Big 12 with just one regular season game remaining. Kansas has two remaining, and its next one is tonight. It's at Oklahoma. Kansas is a one-point favorite, and if Kansas loses this game, that's game, set, match, because that'll be a sixth league loss. And again, if Texas Tech and Kansas State both lose this weekend, they'll only have five league losses. So if Kansas does not win tonight, the streak, which is the longest in history for a Power 5 school of consecutive Power Conference titles, the streak will be done if Kansas doesn't win tonight at Oklahoma. And the truth is, even if Kansas does win tonight, it's probably done anyway. Because the only way they can at least get a share of the Big 12 regular season title is if then both Texas Tech and Kansas State lose this weekend. And Texas Tech might because it's at Iowa State. But Kansas State is at home, regular season finale against Oklahoma. And Oklahoma is good, NCAA tournament team, probably, but also ranked 40th at KenPom. And here's the truth. Kansas State has not lost at home to a sub-35 KenPom team all season long. So for Kansas State to lose on Saturday, they'll have to do something that they've literally never done this season. That seems unlikely. So one way or another, it appears the streak is over, but it could officially be over tonight. And more than anything, and it doesn't mean Texas Tech and Kansas State or whoever wins it should apologize, because you take these things however you can get them. But Kansas lost two starters midseason. Yudoka Azubuike to an injury, a season-ending injury. Then LeGerald Vick from Memphis to a personal leave of absence. And that really changed the dynamic of that basketball team. Like, what teams in the country could lose two starters and still compete for a power conference title? Not many. And it appears that Kansas is among those that cannot do it. Because, again, barring something very unlikely, the streak will end at 14 consecutive Big 12 titles.
Story number three.
Big game down at the Pavilion tonight in Oxford, Mississippi, on the campus at Ole Miss. It's number 6 Kentucky at Ole Miss. Tip is scheduled for 8 o'clock Central. You can watch it on ESPN. And it's a big opportunity for Kermit Davis in year one. They've already gotten one big win after another. It's why Jerry Palm has Ole Miss right now projected as a 9 seed in the NCAA tournament. That's safely in the field, but a win over UK obviously would help. And the truth is, you want to get off that 8-9 line, because what history shows is that you're better off being a 10 seed, 11 seed, 12 seed. Now, you don't want to go backwards, but like, you'll get the point in a second. You're better off being a 10, 11, 12, or, you know, a 7, 6, 5 than you are an 8-9 if your goal is to get to the second weekend. Like, 8-9 is about the worst place you can be as an at-large team, and the reason is simple. You know, Ole Miss is projected as a 9 seed right now. That means they played 8 seed in the opening round. It's a coin flip game, probably. You win it, congrats. You lose it, it's over. But if you win it, now you run into the 1 seed. So now you're dealing with Duke or Virginia or Gonzaga, and then it's probably over for you. You're much better off being a 12 seed, trying to beat a 5 and then a 4, than you are to be a 8 or a 9 seed, trying to beat the other and then a 1. Statistically, historically, that is what the evidence shows. And so a win tonight could maybe get Ole Miss moving up the seed line. And, you know, even if they move up a seed, it'd only go from 9-8, but that'd get you closer to 7-6. So big opportunity for Kermit Davis. Kentucky, 5.5-point favorite right now on the road. Again, you can watch it 8 o'clock on ESPN.
Story number 4.
And then at 8 o'clock on the SEC Network, so you can watch them both. It's Mississippi State at number 5, Tennessee, Thompson Bowling Arena in Knoxville on campus at UT. Tennessee, 8-point favorite at home. But these are two teams that are supposed to both be in the NCAA tournament. Mississippi State is unranked right now, but Jerry Palm has them as a 6 seed in his projected bracket. Do the math on that. 6 times 4 means they'd be a top 24 team, according to Jerry Palm. I've got them 25th in the top 25 and 1, so he and I think more of them than the AP voters seem to think. Meantime, Tennessee coming off that massive win over the weekend over Kentucky. They're now 26-3. The only losses are to top 15 Kansas, top 15 Kentucky, top 15 LSU, all away from home. So their resume is rock solid. It's why they are projected 1 seed right now, according to Jerry Palm. And I would suspect they get by this tonight. I don't know that Mississippi State's equipped to go into Knoxville and win a game. And then, you know, the goal, at least the first goal in front of Tennessee right now, is to go ahead and secure an SEC championship. You'll want to knock out this Mississippi State game, because your next game is at Auburn, and you might be favored there, but if you're favored, it'll be by a point or something very close. LSU is the team you're most competing with for that SEC title. They don't play tonight, but LSU is at Florida on Wednesday night, and then they close with Vanderbilt. So there's no doubt, because Vanderbilt stinks, that LSU is at least going to go 1-1 in its next two games. So the goal for Tennessee has got to be at least that. And that means, you know, knocking out this Mississippi State game, because at Auburn is, like I said, very much a coin flip situation. Again, that tips at 8 o'clock tonight. It's on the SEC Network. Jeff Calkins is up next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.